Hi, this is Manly Mike Curtis, and you are listening to Spellburn.
In the caverns beneath the earth, all turn mad.
And by my hand he fell. Humanity poured from his corpse and filled me to the brim. It flashed arcs and beams of power and flared my flesh reborn. The dark gods were pleased with the living blood I had spilt and rewarded me with riches. Taking these, I traded with the stranger for weapons, tinctures, and powerful magics.
In the caverns beneath the earth, all turn mad.
Release the princess. I'll prepare for wizardly combat.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
And I'll not laugh or fast step up to feel it.
Welcome to Spellburn, a podcast covering the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game and old-school adventuring. It's time to party like it's 1974.
This week on Spellburn, we have finally succeeded in summoning forth the Reverend Dak J. Ultimak, one of the driving forces behind the DCC RPG zine scene, including the zine that started it all, Crawl. Join us tonight as we ask Dak about his work on his various zines and publications, plus his mighty editorial pen that seems to turn up in published DCC adventures when you least expect it. We may even uncover Dak's secret connection to the origins of the Spellburn podcast. Welcome to the show, Dak.
Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
I'm Judge Jim, and with me tonight are my co-judges, Judge Jeffrey.
Hello, everyone.
Judge Job.
Kamusta ka?
And the lovely Judge Jen.
Hey, guys.
So let's go straight to the tavern.
And the first rule of bartending is this. GBTB. Go beyond the book. Go beyond the book.
What do you have?
Heineken! F*** that.
Tavern Talk. This is the section, Dak, where we talk about what we did in gaming this past week. And as the guest, you may go first.
Oh, boy. Well, the funny thing is I've been out of town for the last 2 weeks. But I did bring gaming books with me to read while I was not busy.
That's perfectly acceptable. So, sometimes on Save or Die, all we talk about is what we bought in gaming this past week.
Oh.
So what you reading?
Oh, well, when I got home, I had a stack of zines. I got Crawling Under the Broken Moon, Demon Drums by Tim Callahan, Crawl Jammer number 4. I got the Goodman Games Gen Con Program Guide. So I got a bunch of stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah, your mailbox sounds almost like mine.
That stuff I use as a mailing address, my work address. That stuff all shows up when I'm at work in the day and they think I'm insane.
Not too far.
Yeah, okay. Since you stuck your head up, what did you do in gaming this week, Jen?
Well, we spent some time tooling around town, checking out possible locations for our open table games. We decided to give a newly opened gaming store a try, and there's actually another one a little closer to us due to open in a month, so looking forward to that. This week, we also got back into our first ed game, where, alas, my 9th level cleric that I've been bolstering up since July of 2012 is currently on ice. we were up against the Frost Giants, and I remembered the prayer was up at the last second, so I got one hit point. Would have been better if I was down, because the next time I got hit was over 20. It's like, ooh, okay, ouch. Yeah, that's going to leave a mark.
So dead or dead?
Dead. But, you know, we're in the frozen tundra, so they get to keep her body on ice until a potential resurrection, you know, in a few years. yeah, this That's is awesome. My group. And thanks to an upcoming zine-style supplement that Carl Bussler is putting out, it's going to be called Prayers of the Forgotten. I got a sneak peek at that, so that's really been helping me get my mojo back and get back into figuring out where the party's going when we restart our game in a week or two.
Nice. That's good news about finding a new home for gaming.
Very, very nice. Yes. How about you, Jeffrey?
Well, last week we actually wrapped up our DCC campaign. Finally came. I know. It was one of those things we had a couple people that are going to get busy schedules, and rather than fizzle out over time with attrition or things like that, it was just better to let's wrap up some of the plot arcs we've got going on and just sort of, you know, everybody be there. Because most of the group have been there with us for 2 years, so it just didn't feel right to let them, you know, one of the guys has some school conflicts and another one's shifting jobs, I think, and just didn't seem right to let them miss out on the end of the campaign because of that. So, we wrapped up the game. I don't want to spoil or anything, but I will say I did manage to kill an 8th level DCC character, which at those higher levels really harder to do than you would think, but yeah. Managed to do it, which was cool on my end. So we got that. I won't say who it was yet. And then once more the actual play is released, I'll talk a little more about how that whole went. But everyone had a great time. We're going to take a short break. I think one of the other guys is going to run something for a few weeks while I sort of catch my breath and regroup, and we'll figure out what we jump into next. But it was a good time. That was a 2-year campaign, all with people I met online, who've all become great friends. So it was sort of after the day after, everyone was like, wow, it's like over. But the group's still going to keep playing stuff. So that's good. So it's not like I'm out of a game. Just we're switching gears just a little bit. So
to Swords and Wizardry, right?
Yeah, we're going to do Swords and Wizardry for probably the next 4 to 8 weeks. One of the guys in my group, Dustin, who runs a really good game, he ran some stuff for us at Origins and just ran a really fun adventure he wrote. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun to be a player for a little bit. So we're going to jump right back into it, and we'll be doing Swords and Wizardry for a bit.
So, Jeffrey, did you talk to Vince about the thing?
I haven't yet. It's on my list of things to do on Monday is touch base with him and talk about the thing.
Okay. Could be good news in a forthcoming podcast.
Yes, it could be.
For the Iron Tavern live play podcast.
Yep, definitely could be. Yeah, possible cool stuff on that front.
How about you, Mr. Joe?
Well, I talked about last week, PAX Prime happened not too long ago here, last weekend, I guess. And my brother came in town sort of unexpectedly. I haven't seen him for 6 years. So I ended up not running any games at all. I did sit in and people were playing my 5e adventure, the Courting of Fire, and just kind of watch that for a while. So that was interesting.
Did they know who you were?
No. One guy knew who I was, but he knew who I was, but he didn't know I wrote it. And then I told him I wrote it, and then I was like, he was like, hey, look who we have. And I was like, shh, I'm trying to, I wanted to see how people are actually playing it. I don't want them to know who I am. So
is it out already? Lurking. Or was it just a playtest?
Well, it's their Adventurers League thing. So it's,
okay.
It was a PAX exclusive. It's not, you can't get it until like October or November, something like that, for people who are in that Adventurers League program. So other than that, it was more like, what did I buy in gaming last weekend? So that was, I picked up Torchbearer finally, I got the little GM screen for it. The GM screen was like kind of low profile. It was actually pretty cool. And they, what is that place called? Ad Magic, Card Ad Magic, I think it's called, that game printing place.
By low profile, do you mean landscape as opposed to horizontal?
Well, it was landscape, but it wasn't 8.5 by 11. It was like landscape A4 or something. I don't know. It's pretty tiny. It was actually cool because it doesn't cover you up, hide you from players. You know what I mean? So I like that. That book, it's okay, but there's some cool stuff in it that I think I would steal for a DCC game, like their town adventures portion of it and stuff like that. So it's an interesting book. It's a cool, I'm glad I picked it up.
I've learned that which orientation the GM screen is a thing. Like, are you comfortable gaming directly from your iPad or not? I mean, the old guys like me, I want my giant GM screen. It's part of my symbol of my authority of judging, right? But all the kids like landscape.
I just want to be able to see people and interact with them.
That's why you stand and wave your arms around and scare them.
I can't see anymore, Jim. I'm getting old. I won't be able to see my GM screen if I'm standing up.
Well, I mean,
I am GM screen free.
There's that school too.
I'm more comfortable that way, but Bob bought me a screen and wants me to use it, so I use it for the pretty artwork on the outside. I don't actually have any tables on the inside.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't use a screen anymore. I used to use a screen because I felt like I had to hide the dice and hide all that stuff. But these days, I don't hide anything. I just roll the dice out in the open, and I don't feel the need for a screen these days. But to each their own.
The only reason I really use it is I don't really care about hiding the dice, and I usually roll them up over the table anyway. But for maps,
yeah,
that's really the only kind of reason that I use it for, or the how many hit points are left, because where the shed that we normally play in is pretty cramped, and Bart is always looking over it and like seeing how many hit points are left and stuff. I'm like, get the hell out of here.
Well, many judges whose judging style I am totally in awe of and completely admire prefer to just go screenless and roll out in front of the players. Bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Not me. I ain't doing it. I don't have any poker face anyway, so they know what I'm rolling back there. They have a pretty good idea what's coming.
When Jim starts giggling like a little girl, look
you're
out.
You're in trouble. Yeah.
If I wasn't such a chronically poor dice roller, they'd be more scared, but I'm... we were supposed to continue and finish up a sweet playtest of Edgar's Against the Atomic Overlord last night, but Rick Hull, our playtest judge, pooped out on us. I think he wife aggroed or something. But as far as what we're doing in gaming, we got a really good thing. We're going to try and have a DCC character tournament like Harley ran it. Gen Con as a store event at Gateway Games. And I think
cool.
The idea we've cooked up as a group is to have them use Frozen in Time level zeros, and in my post-apocalyptic universe have them just stumble into the museum at the end of time and drop straight into this holographic hall of history, which will then become the seven rooms, and each holographic suite, which of course the software protocols are all broken and off and it's a death zone, will be a different flavor of DCC, so that we can have each room be straight DCC, Transylvania Adventures, Metal Gods of Ur-Hadad, Crawling Under a Broken Moon, and give it, that way we can pimp everything Todd has on his shelves and promote the game systems all at once.
Nice.
Oh, that is inspired.
Is there a date on that yet? I might head down for that.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
I've been looking for an excuse to head down there, anyways. And I'm just like, I wonder when there's going to be a store event. That sounds right up where I should be.
We're talking about October 25th, and we're going to just that Saturday. We're going to nuke the board gamers out of the place and force them all to play DCC.
Nice.
I'm penciling it in on my calendar. That could be tough. That's really close to my anniversary, but I'm going to pencil it in. See what happens.
Well, now, Jeffrey, if they can, repeat that again around the first week of December, maybe we could have a little reunion there or something.
What, are you going to be in town first week of December?
Yeah, possibly.
Oh, well, then that might be cool, too. That would actually work in my schedule a little better, too.
Hey, Jim, maybe. Nudge Todd.
Well, I mean, first things first, let's see if James Smith and I think are going to pretty much co-write it, maybe with some help from Rick and a couple other guys. Let's get the thing written and try it and see if it works first.
All right. All you practical people.
Oh, it's a great idea to have. I want to do something just as good as Harley did. That's a great idea. Than actually doing it. It's a little harder.
I'll give you that one. All right.
All right. Well, I feel like it's time to summon some emails. Let's do that.
You've got mail.
Message for you, sir.
Summon email.
The following emails have been edited accordingly, and content.
So the emails keep rolling in.
Yeah, we've got a decently growing stack here. Let's see. First one comes from Roy Snyder. Lucas the Mad here. Back from my fight with Crazy Bill. I won, by the way. And wanted to drop you great sages a line. First off, please let me tell you what a great job you guys are doing for the DCC community. My crew and I love the format, and a big thank you for promoting the best RPG game to come along in easily 20 years.
Hell yeah.
The more gamers who get their attention on this, the better. Amen, Roy. Secondly, to everyone concerned about the little girl getting killed and pouting, I believe he's referring to something that happened at GaryCon here.
That was the GaryCon one.
Especially the one who killed her. Do not fret. This was not her first death at the hands of a DCC judge. Now, I'm wondering if he's thinking about the same girl here. He says Harley Stroh chose her out of a table of seasoned gamers with her father present and sacrificed her to the gods in an early playtest of Perils of the Purple Planet at last Gen Con. Believe he'd be referring to Ms. Scatch in that case. And the one, was it David Beatty who had killed the girl
at GaryCon?
Yeah, that wasn't... Yeah.
Different girl.
That wasn't Jim's...
And that was a Mike Curtis game.
That wasn't Jim's daughter.
Right. No. No, not that one. But the young Ms. Scatch is a great role player. I'll agree with Roy on that one.
Oh, Jim's brought his kids up old school. They can take a hit like that and shrug
it
off.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Roy says, my crew and I look forward to the chance of gaming with you all at Gen Con. Well, we did, and it was fun.
A little behind an email once again.
Yeah, just a little. Roy says, P.S., send Michigan gamers my way. I need more players. I'll be running DCC games at Grand Con as well as UConn this year. So, any listeners, I don't believe we're too late for that one, or at least I hope not.
I'm one of the guests at UConn, and Doug Kovacs is going to be there, along with Roy, and a whole bunch of DCC is going on. They're really opening up a big OSR, they have a term for it. They call it not a thread. Damn it. They're making a big move to add lots of old school to UConn this year.
Awesome.
Pretty cool.
Cthulhu Fatagan, signed Roy Snyder, a.k.a. Judge Lucas the Mad.
Oh, thanks, Roy.
Yeah, thanks, Roy. And Roy, thanks for the present I got on my mailbox after Gen Con. So thank you very much.
Yep, agreed. I got one of those as well, or something similar, I'm sure. And thank you very much. It was much appreciated.
Yeah, likewise.
Damn it. Everybody got a t-shirt except me.
I didn't get one.
Well, he had some left over, and he put it on Google Plus. I've got some left over, and I'm like, I'd like one. He goes, oh, I got you one. Adam Muskovich has got it. Muskovich. God damn it. So I'm like, oh, that doesn't do me any good if Adam's got it.
Well, he's closer than I was, so maybe you'll get that one on Adam's next road trip, Jim.
We'll just have to lure him down here to run some more games again.
Sounds like a plan. All right.
Well, thanks for that email, Roy. And our next one is from Mark Bolam. Hey, Spellburners. Since many of you do playtesting or run DCC or MCC at cons, I'm looking for a little advice. I'm running three DCC RPG games at our local con in Pittsburgh, GaspCon, gaspgamer.com. A zero-level funnel using Nebin Pendlebrook's Perilous Pantry, a third-level adventure using the Croaking Fane, and a fifth-level adventure using Beyond the Black Gate. When we're running one-shots, playtest, or con games with higher-level adventures, how do you handle the character equipment? I plan on using Purple Sorcerer app to generate random characters, provide some weapon suggestions, and I can fill in or hand-wave the standard adventuring gear they would have acquired. Do you ever include any magic items? or do you just launch them with normal equipment? Any recommendations would be great. Thanks for the great podcast. I've been listening since the beginning, and it's a great resource as a memory jog for those that might recognize the name. I survived the first fan.
I was just going to say it's Michael Bolin, not Mark.
I am so sorry. Who's Mark Bolin? That's like T-Rex or something, right?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, my God. Stuck in the 70s. Okay. Wow. Okay, so he survived the first Phantasmagoria with Judge Jen at GaryCon 2014. TPK'd on the Warden with Judge Jim at NTRPG 2014 and chuckled alongside Judge Jeffrey as Judge Job and Doug Kovacs argued about NPR hosts, I think, in the Geneva Ridge restaurant long after wiser folks had retired for the evening. Oh, yeah, I remember this dude.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the mail, Mike.
Yeah, thanks. So yeah, what do you guys do when you run higher level games?
I think there's a rule of thumb.
Yeah, basic adventuring equipment, unless you specifically want them to have something out of the norm.
Jump in there, Dak.
There's like a weird rule of thumb thing in the core book about what kind of magic items they would have at certain levels. And I can't think of where. I think I even wrote an article based on it, but I can't figure it out right now. Everything's too far away for me.
Well, your magic, that would be issue 3.
Yeah. Is it the magic issue? Oh, it might be in the loot issue. Hold on. This is about two feet away. there was, the distribution of magic items in the core book had like basic ideas of like what level they would have, what magic item they would have. And I think it's like a third level they would have like a plus one item or equivalent or something like that. Something like that.
I just learned something. I didn't know that was in a rule book because I tend to just hot dog stuff like this.
Yeah, it's a guideline thing for sure. Distribution of magic items.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, Jim. I just if they're starting above, zero level, I just kind of throw a couple magic items in there. If it's a 6 level game, I'll probably throw more in. If it's a first level, there might be one between the entire party or something.
I mean, if you're doing it right, you've got to arm them with a little something because they would have picked that up in their career somewhere when they were burning their luck stat down to the ground, which I also make sure I attend to in a high level play. Like eighth level characters should not have great luck scores.
Oh yeah.
No.
Nope.
And I just hope my players don't find this chart because they'll be mad.
No, it's actually not a very good. I think it's like one plus one item for equivalent for a third level character. So it's pretty light on the amount of magic that Joseph recommended.
Well, yeah, because magic's supposed to be rare in the ideal DCC environment. So that kind of makes sense.
I was pretty light on magic items. We had 8th level characters, and I think there's probably a handful of those that didn't have magic items on it with them. So maybe, I don't know. Yeah, magic was certainly rare in my campaign.
It's worth considering thoughtfully because the system is already so swingy that if you hand out a really choice set of magic items to high-level characters, you're going to have to deal with it later. I mean, the end of Glip Caro and Glip Caro's Gambit was a Mazer rifle I forgot I gave a player.
Yeah, I've been running mostly.
I don't remember putting that in there.
Yeah.
I've been running mostly the official adventures, and they're actually pretty loaded with magic items. So my group, they're only like 5th level now. No, 4th. They're only at 4th level, and we've been playing for like 2 years now. But so they've been going up slowly because I've killed a lot of them. But they have a lot of magic items.
No, you're right about that, because we had a guy that drugged that flail from Sailors of the Starless Seas around for forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that ring, too, that Cesar Khan's ring in Sailors is pretty badass for level 0.
Well, okay, Mike. I hope in some way we helped.
Marginally? At least?
Entertainment value, if nothing else. How about another email?
Sure. We'll take the next one from John Hirschberger. Hey there, Spellburners. Taco John here. Thanks for the super fun DCC RPG podcast. I'm pretty new to the podcast experience, but this summer I've listened to most of the Spellburn episodes. I've also been cherry-picking a few episodes of the Save or Die and Roll for Initiative podcasts. For me and my time, the Spellburn episodes are far and away the most entertaining and consistently rewarding of these three old school podcasts. So kudos to all of you. Well, and thank you, John. And just as a little aside to Taco John here, he sent us probably two screens worth of email, and we just, dude, our show's maybe 90 minutes long, so we got to cut to the chase.
This email has been edited for length and content.
Thank you. He says, I'm not anywhere near ready to run DCC RPG yet, as I think it's a pretty different game from AD&D. Well, you're mostly right there. But I'm dying to run some DCC RPG games down the road, perhaps at future conventions. Next, we had issues of four of the zines in our Black Blade booth at CantCon: Crawl, Crawljammer, Metal Gods, and Crawling Under a Broken Moon. They were a huge hit with the con attendees. Here's a shout out to Judge Jen, for helping ensure that the DCC zines will be available at Gen Con this year at the Goodman Games booth. And I did, and they were, and less than 30% of them came back home with me. So you guys all rock for supporting the zine authors, too. He says, thanks again for the informative and insightful podcast, and hope to see all of you at a convention soon. John Taco John Hirschberger.
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. Yes.
And I have to thank you, too, Jen, myself, for hosting our zines. Awesome.
My primary question to you was, what made you think 25 copies of Crawl was going to do it for last year's Gen Con sales?
It was 35 copies of each, but yeah.
You sent me with 5 copies of 1 through 5, and I'm going,
really?
For last year?
Yeah, I forget.
Last year, yeah, it was a small box. They were sold out by like 10:30 the first day. Joseph's like, you got more, right? No, sorry. That's all he sent me. That. So this year we fixed that.
Yeah,
we're not to the interview part of the segment yet, but Dak, thank you for making it possible for retailers to stock your fanzine if they want to, because that can't be easy. And I'm fortunate to have a friendly local game store, Gateway Games, that has it on the shelf all the time.
Yeah, they're great.
That was awesome to see, too.
Well, I think that wraps it up for emails, so let's get to the interview with Mr. Dak.
Oh, boy.
Yay!
Let's go do some mighty deeds.
Wait a second. I have an idea.
That's plenty for the both of us.
I move for no man.
Ow.
So, Dak, welcome to the show once again.
Thanks.
We are really excited to have you here. It took a while, like about a year and a half.
Has it been a year and a half? Yeah, I guess so.
a year and a half and 6 hours or something like that. Not that we've been keeping track, but...
We might talk about the secret origin of Spellburn and how you were involved in that later, but how about we just start off with, like, how'd you get your start in gaming? What edition did you start with, and how did you get into this crazy hobby?
I started... it was fourth grade, and I know that for sure. I just can't figure out the math of what year that was. But I think the last time I figured it out, it was 1980. Or 81. And so it was my friend got a copy of the Holmes edition, and then we were only fourth graders, but we tried to figure it out, but we had a hard time figuring that out. And then somebody got the Dungeon Board game, and that kind of taught us some concepts. And that was all within like a year or two. And then random new kid, older brother, was a DM or played advanced D&D, and then he started and he was our group's first actual real DM, and then that's when everything changed, and that was mind blowing.
I understand exactly what you're saying, because I wasn't in fourth grade in 1981, and I still had to be taught how to play when we first found the Holmes edition in 79. That was, yeah. I mean, sometimes people will like look at retro clones and things today and complain, why does this have to have the here are the dice, this is how you play section? But back then, you had to be taught how to play.
Yeah. Even reading the examples of play didn't make sense until you actually did it.
Right, yeah, because you had no reference.
Yeah.
Did the dungeon board game help make it easier? Because I found myself in sort of the same path. Dungeon and like the Moldvay set came about the same time. In fact, I can't remember if dungeon board game came first and made me think, oh, this other set was cool. But yeah, did you think that helped make it a little easier?
Definitely. Because we around the same time we discovered the dungeon board game, we got the original basic red box set, the original one.
Yep.
And so we're still trying to figure it all out, but we always went back to the dungeon board game, which taught us like the basics of opening doors and fighting monsters and that kind of stuff, and just stepping through dungeons and rolling dice to resolve you getting killed or not, or finding treasure and stuff. So that stuff definitely helped.
What's beautiful about that story is if you've read John Peterson's Playing at the World, the guys who, I mean, Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson helped themselves figure out how they wanted to build D&D with the dungeon board game.
Right. Yeah, I did read that one too. I actually bought the latest version of it just to have it so I could...
How is that one? Is that one any good?
The quality of the board game, I would say, is poor. The materials... But the game is super simple. It's a lot like the original one or whichever came out in the early 80s or late 70s.
Yeah, I don't think that was it. Are you talking about the purple one with the smaller box?
That's a late 70s version you're talking about.
Yeah. Joe. Or the one I had, which was it had like the Errol Otis big, you know, cover of some kind of adventures in a dungeon.
Yeah, I think that's the one we first played.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was mine too. I actually picked one of those up on eBay, and I play that with my kids all the time. They love that game.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Cool. Yeah, I guess we could cut to the chase and say, what prompted you to start your own zine for DCC?
I've always been interested in the zines, in zines in general. I hang out with a lot of crusty punk types and stuff like that, and DIY cultures a lot of it is part of me and my community of like real life friends or face-to-face friends, and making our own bikes, riding bicycles around, and just going to like little indie shows and stuff like that. So zines have always been kind of around me, and I've never stopped playing D&D. So when DCC came around, it was like an opportunity to make a gaming zine, which did not exist as far as I knew at the time.
You've very much reinvented the format for all the zines, DCC zines that have followed.
Right. Which makes me really happy. It's I mean, I buy every zine that I come across now that's game related. Everyone I seek out and find. And
I was going to ask, do you find yourself like Daniel Boone? After you blazed a trail and now there's a bunch of other guys here in Kentucky, it's time to go to Missouri?
No, not at all. I'm excited that there are so many zines, and I'm excited every time a new one gets announced, and I immediately contact them and try to negotiate a trade with them, stuff like that. I think it's only the DIY aspect of D&D just really comes out in the zines.
When I first got Craw, I was just really impressed by the quality of it. So I figured that you'd probably worked on other zines before or something. Have you... written for other or created other zines before?
No, I've published a couple other zines before Crawl that were, one was a thing of fiction that a friend wrote, and I kind of like published that one without his knowledge because it was a blog, and I took the blog and I made a zine out of it, and then I started distributing it, and he got a kick out of it, and then I did another one for this. No, no, I guess that was probably it. That was like the first scene I ever released myself. And then I started doing Crawl.
So you said you played D&D for a while, but DC, what about, how'd you get to DCC and then, you know, the motivation to make a zine for DCC? So we know you started with Holmes, you probably did some AD&D. you know, lots of history between what brought you to DCC and then also, you know, moved you, motivated you enough to make a zine for DCC.
DCC was, I basically fell out of mainstream D&D along with everybody else when the old school OSR was created. And so I kind of followed that path and just like started reading what other people were doing and paying attention to the older school, the retro clones and stuff like that. And when DCC got announced, I caught wind of it and I read about it and anticipated the beta and got the beta and actually played with Joseph himself in Orange County when he was still running the beta. And I really found the game that had like the right amount of crunch and the right amount of looseness and chaoticness that I kind of missed when playing AD&D and basic D&D. Because mm-hmm. I played a little bit of second, didn't care for it, didn't care for all the campaign settings and all the splat books. Played third edition for as long as it existed, and then played fourth edition for a couple years, and that's when I discovered the old school, the OSR scene, and so I basically stopped playing fourth edition.
Dude, you're singing my song because I played at least a sampling of every single edition because friends of mine would run it, and it got increasingly disenfranchised with the whole D&D notion, and had just gotten around to, okay, I'm seeing the stuff online, what is there, and almost went with Castles and Crusades because that was just coming out the gate, and then I found DCC, and they say you can't go home again. I open up and start reading those rules, and it's the first time I felt like it was the late 70s again, where we were all out proselytizing and evangelizing D&D because nobody knew who it was then.
Yeah. I looked at Castles and Crusades, but I was not a fan of... There was something about it that it didn't appeal to me. I think it was like the production values or something, or the graphic design or something that I couldn't grasp.
Well, you and Carl Zine were part of this experience that I personally had, because as soon as I got into DCC and started jumping into the early playtest, sounds like maybe 6 months to a year after you found it, because I didn't come along till after it was already on shelves. Then here comes this zine out of nowhere, and I mean, I'm oldest person present right now, so I mean, I was a teenager in the 70s, that 70s show kind of thing, and it's the 21st century, and here's a zine, like we used to have Star Trek zines back in the 70s. I'm like, oh my god, this is perfect.
Yeah. I actually released Crawl Number 1 when the rulebook came out.
Really?
They got released the same week. I wasn't allowed to release it until the rulebook was able to come out.
Well, that makes sense.
You were really raring to go.
Yeah, I was ready. The zine was finished for probably about 3 months, and then once the final rulebook came out, which I had access to because I was part of the beta process or whatever. But so I had access to a draft, and so I was able to fix the rest of the zine before I released it.
I see. There's an ad for Crawl, I think, in the core rulebook too, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Sure is.
And as opposed to half the stuff that was in those ads, yours came out.
Yeah.
Ooh.
No, most of them came out. I think all of them actually came out by now.
Yeah, it just took a little while.
Yeah.
I think there's one in there that didn't come out. So when Crawl started up, it was print only, right?
Yeah, it was print only. There was another zine that Leviatar by Christian Walker, local guy also. He was releasing this zine for a while. Now for about a year before even DCC, and that and Jason Schultz released something, and that really, really motivated me to do my own zine because I've been thinking about it for a long time. And then when DCC came out, it just felt like the perfect opportunity because I really liked the game.
What was the Jason Schultz one? That was that like Hippogriff one or something, right?
Yeah.
I have that. I forgot what it's called, but yeah, I picked that up too.
Yep, that and all the Leviatars. Those really motivated me to make it happen.
All right, I got to check out Leviatar. I don't have that one.
Hard to get.
Oh.
Yeah, he's no longer zining. People ask me if Christian Walker is going to release any more Leviatar, and I asked him, and he basically just said no.
Well, would he consider releasing those in PDF, maybe? Yeah, the existing ones?
No. Oh, that was the question. My zine was print only originally. He will not release it digitally because he thinks the process of making the physical zine and distributing it as a physical zine is the whole point of it. And I kind of agreed with him for the longest time before I changed my mind. I was starting to read more things digitally myself. I own the tablet, and just a little 7-inch tablet, and I still it's 4 years old now, or three, four years old now, but I use it a lot. And if I kind of feel like I need, and I like printing out things too. And if I felt like I needed everything to be digital also, because I still buy physical always. I think other people feel the same way, so I can't be. I decided not to be a hypocrite about it, basically.
Okay.
I'm your ideal target audience because I'm like you. I have to have print. I want it in my hands, but I just want them.
Oh,
both.
Yeah.
But I want them both now that there's tablets around. I need both, so I'll buy it twice. Yeah. I don't care.
Yeah, me too.
I still like print. Stuff I get in PDF, I never read. It's like a big ass folder with gigs, hundreds of gigs of PDFs in there, probably.
Yeah, I can't sit and read a rule book on the screen or on PDF. I have to have the physical book.
Hey, Dak, I've got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
You worked on the production of the Damn zine, right?
I basically helped publish it, and I did some graphic design, it's basically somebody else's creative effort.
So, will there ever be a print version, even a print on demand?
That would be up to
the publisher. Say the publisher.
The publisher, that's me.
Exactly.
I don't have access to the original files. I don't have the editor is busier than I am, apparently.
Damn, Jen. This podcast got all meet the press real quick there.
But yeah, no, I would love it.
It was worth a shot, man.
I would love it to be in print.
Well, let's talk about the process. I'm sure there are listeners that are interested in the physical process that goes into producing one of these, as well as some of the more ephemeral issues like getting things approved through Joseph Goodman.
Right.
There's a whole process there. It involves folding machines and guillotine cutters and...
You want to know the physical process of the making the physical zines, or the process of creating the content? And
well, I think content comes first, right?
Well,
logically, content comes first. Content is king.
Yeah, basically, I come up with the theme, and I because I usually want to write something for it, but I'll come up with a theme and throw it out there and hope for enough contributions and my own stuff. And so it gets written first, for sure. So once the writing process happens, once writing process is done, that's when I'll go and start editing with a friend of mine and who actually speaks English better than I do, an actual English major versus me, who's a graphic designer. So it kind of works. That's my biggest contribution is I actually went to school for graphic design, and I'm able to put that stuff together, and I love print media. But editing, once I get into the editing process, that's when I start thinking about art. And so I'll start contacting artists to, because once I'm editing, that's when I'm starting to like lay it out in my head. And so that makes me think about what the art I want. And then I try to get the art. Then once the editing's done and the art's done, I get them to layout. I can start layout sometimes before the art is done, and then
because it's kind of interactive. You'll be like, okay, this article needs a nice splash illo, and then you'll be laying it out and go, oh, I've got a hole here. I need a piece to go right in that hole.
Exactly. Yep. And then send it off. Make the digital files printable and send them off to your printers, and they come back and. Then the manual process of stapling and folding and stuffing them in envelopes and sticking stamps on them. which is fun. But that's a whole day right there.
Do you have like a whole little group of gnomes helpers to do that, or is it all one man?
It's usually just me.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had a few friends help, but I mostly end up doing it by myself.
So has your process changed? Do you do anything like edge cutting or
no.
Do you crease before you fold or anything? I mean, what's the physical process of assembling this thing look like now?
Definitely staple first. I still staple first, then fold. Because when you staple them, it keeps the pages straight when you fold them.
So what kind of stapler do you use?
I think I got a swing line. I got a couple swing line long reach staplers.
Long reach, okay.
Yeah.
Job, you sound like you're actually going to start a zine.
Well, all those, I assembled all my Into the Demon Idol, and I actually
oh, that's right.
emailed yeah. Dak about this like, I don't know, a year ago or something.
Yeah, I don't cut the edges or some, I think Carl's doing the really fancy edges, which are really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
There's definitely, I haven't gotten to that point where I'm using fancy papers and hand stitching them with threads and stuff like that. I'm not worried about that kind of stuff.
Well, there's a conceptual barrier there because what you're trying to produce is something that's very of the moment.
Right.
I mean, with a zine, I'm sure that made sense. Like, nobody edge cuts a punk band poster that's going to be stapled on a telephone pole. Right.
No. Yeah, I'm trying to put a piece of a little booklet with a bunch of information on it, and I should be able to throw it across the room.
Yeah, I realized later why my paper was sticking out so big is I was buying like fancier paper that was really heavy.
Oh yeah.
So then when I folded it, it's like this huge, quarter inch of, or maybe not quarter inch, but a fifth of an inch of paper, like poking out the side of my cover.
Yep.
So what's it like working with Joseph and Goodman Games to do something like this? And maybe tell us a little bit about first approach, which I think if you're playing at the table with him, that's just a conversation across the table. But then maybe for people who are interested in getting into this themselves, what the official approval process is. I don't think we ever talked about that on the podcast.
Oh, okay. It's actually really simple. All I did was, I think I mentioned it on a forum during the beta testing. It's like, oh, I want to do this. And basically I said, I want to make a zine for this game. And what do I do? And Joseph, he replied, and I emailed him again, and emailed him back. And then he sent me the license agreement, which is very simple. It's only 2 pages long, but there's some details that you have to pay attention to that I noticed that some people don't, but that's okay. If when he approves it and it goes through, it's that's fine. But I did read, I probably read into the details a little more than other people. But
what did you notice in there? I mean,
like just some trade dress stuff, like where the compatible with DCC logo goes, and the boxed this product is based on DCC by Goodman Games information, where that goes in the book and stuff like that. Because he was pretty specific about those little details. But other than that, I just gave him the idea of what I was doing, and he was all about it. And I created a first draft of the first scene, and I sent it to him, and he approved of it right away. And so it wasn't too hard.
Very cool.
Most of us have worked with Joseph in some form or another, but I just wanted for the listeners to get an idea of what that process was like. Because the great thing about the DCC community, which you have had a hand in help founding, is how universally friendly it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back to sort of the zine focus. Do you have any words of advice for someone trying to start their own zine? Like, I don't know, things to watch out for, things that you find a big challenge that, someone new might not realize that they're going to have to face when they try to start a zine?
I would say not to worry about any of that stuff and just do it. Just start writing it, start laying it out, whether you do it manually or on a typewriter or digitally. I mean, I went to graphic design school, so I kind of knew how to use these tools. and I know how to send things to printers and stuff like that, and I understand that stuff. But I went to school for that. But you don't need to go to school for that. You can. There was a really good zine called Six Iron Spikes and something like that. Six Iron Spikes, and it looks and feels just like an old school punk rock zine, but it's actually a role playing game zine. It was about 8 pages. Like, the easiest way is just get 4 sheets of paper and staple them in the middle and fold it in half and then draw on it and typewriter on it and glue things to it. And then take it apart, make copies of it, and you can digitize those and you got yourself a digital zine. It's just make them. Just do them. Make them. Distribute them. That's all that's what I recommend.
Yeah, no, that sounds awesome. That's cool.
Get it out there in people's hands.
Yeah.
Yep,
you can always can always redo it if you want to revise it and make a new version. What's the zine? Crawljammer number 1 and number 2. He ended up going back and sending it to this graphic designer, Mike Hildebrandt, who actually worked with too myself. And he had them redone, and so Crawljammer number 1 and number 2 have now they're all the graphic design's consistent through all the way up through number 4 now. And but the original ones were obviously done with Word, but they were still cool. So I wouldn't be afraid of like revising your work either.
I love it. That's what you're saying. That's the whole beauty of do it yourself. I mean, if you can't have a typo in the middle of that, when can you?
Yeah. Do it yourself.
So you are up to 10.
Yeah.
For Crawl.
10th was the one I released just about a month ago.
Do you have a favorite? A personal favorite?
Of all the zines?
Yeah. Which one are you most proud of so far?
I bet if we took a poll amongst listeners, I know which one would be their favorite.
Oh, really? I would say my zines are getting better, and I think the last 3 have been really, really, really good. The firearms issue, which was mostly me, but with a lot of help from members of the community, which was number 8. Number 9 was Daniel Bishop's adventure, which I thought
Arwitch Grinder.
Arwitch Grinder. Awesome. I thought that was amazing. And then I love the art that's in it, which was it's a local guy in San Diego who I was able to meet. He did the art for that. And then I'm pretty happy with the number 10.
At our game store, the firearms issue was the clear, oh my God, I've got to have that one.
Yeah, I was going to second that one.
People who weren't playing DCC were picking that one up.
Nice.
But that's Swords and Wizards,
which you must have known, right? Because you put a hack version of it out.
Well, that's where it came from. But
you did the hack first?
Oh, see, I had the horse in front of the cart, or the other way around.
Yeah, I actually wrote it for Swords and Wizardry first. But I already knew that I was going to turn it into... I knew I was converting it to DCC. I saved the best bits for DCC.
And then, you know, players being players, the issues that have the alternative classes in it.
Yep. Those are probably the type of issues I get requested the most. I got actually more grief from the firearms issue than anything else. Because no one likes guns in their fantasy for some weird reason.
Jeez.
You see that we were just talking about this at the game store last night. There's a sort of late 80s, early 90s thing that started to happen where suddenly it became an idea that properly run D&D needs to be Tolkien-esque high fantasy. And, you know, we're anathema to an android popping up in the dungeon suddenly. That's right. Not the way it was in the old days. In the old days, it was whatever you thought was going to spook your players next.
Yeah. Totally subscribe to that. Expedition to Barrier Peaks, and other weird adventures from AD&D. We're all good.
I mean, either way is fine with me if you guys are having fun, but the thing that it, you know, no gunpowder, that's kind of like a 90s thing.
Which I don't really
I mean, I can't stand Eberron, but I mean, every time I'm like, you know, reading spells and stuff, I'm always thinking that if there was actually magic, the first thing I would do as a level 1 spellcaster would be to, like, you know, put some some ball bearings and a pipe and cast magic missile behind it or something. You know what I mean?
So that's thinking like a player character.
Yep.
How can I game the system?
Right, exactly. It's like, all right, cool. I got magic missile. I'm going to make a combustion engine.
That's one of my favorite things about zero-level characters in DCC is your random item. They will try, every player will try to make use of that random item. And it's always funny.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, Doug does that with his games that he runs at cons where he has that sheet of like 200 random items to hand out, you know, on top of your normal. And it adds a whole, people still talk about the stupid poodle. Well, you know, it's just awesome. It's just that one little thing, and it's like all of a sudden this whole game talks about this poodle, and it involves other people in the party with it. So,
Doug is so Doug because that list has like poodles at one end, and then at the bottom there's Eyes of the Overworld. I mean, there's like an artifact.
Man, I laughed harder with that stupid poodle than I had in any game session. The poodle lives on. Thanks, Jeffrey.
I was the poodle trainer, so I won't forget it.
Yeah, exactly.
So how about some previews of topics for upcoming issues, since you're determining the themes, and especially if you want to throw it out to listeners for contributions?
I threw out two ideas like a month ago or a month or so when I just wrapped up number 10. One would be a... three ideas. One around maritime issues, maritime adventures, sea stuff. Always sounds funny to say nautical issue or maritime issue.
Something to do with your seamen.
Yeah, that's it. And pirates?
Yeah.
But Bob Brinkman has offered to write. He's going to be writing. Probably going to be the anchor issue. The anchor feature of the maritime issue.
Ooh. What does that guy know about pirates?
Yeah, Bob writing about pirates. How strange.
Yeah, he's going to write some naval combat rules for me.
Really? For DCC? Yeah. That would be awesome.
Yep.
Yes, I'm sweet. So proud.
Yeah, and I have another author doing so. The next issues, I've settled on the maritime issue because I've had more contributions have come for that than anything else so far. So that's usually that'll guide my next direction. Yeah, the next one will probably be house rules or something around either a luck issue or a house rules issue, whichever it'll end up being both, I'm sure, but whichever leans heavier on. After that, so I asked the community what kind of house rules people have been using, and I also asked how you've been using luck in your game, because luck is a big part of DCC.
Are you talking about like how luck is given out or how you allow it to be spent?
That both.
Okay.
How everybody, because I'm curious about how people use luck in the game. I reward luck acting. For following your alignment, and I especially reward luck if it's to the detriment of the party. And that's how I do it.
That sounded like you award a luck point if somebody does something that's to the detriment of the party?
If it's along the lines of their alignment.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. If they're acting within the purview of their character, but it still screws the party.
I was going to say, that didn't sound like a player. That sounded like a co-judge.
Well, it's up to them. It's up to the players.
Zach, I'm glad I have you. I was kind of coming up with a pitch for luck. And, you know, maybe this would work for you. It's like, I have this whole system for replacing all of luck in DCC with poodle buy points. And you can cash them in.
Poodle buy points
to outfit your poodles. Well, we could take this offline. You know, I don't want.
Yeah. Send me a submission with a short version of it.
Adam may already have the poodle die. Didn't we have a poodle die when we played? So there may be.
Hey, spoiler alert! Hey, Jeffrey.
Job, are you just trying to bait Doug into emailing us?
Oh man! Okay.
What's new, Jim?
Oh, we haven't gotten an email from Doug in a while. Let's torture him some.
Did you do that last episode by congratulating him or praising, giving him some praise? That's probably why he stopped writing us.
Yeah, I know. That's an artist thing. I don't take it well either. But Doug has let me know not to talk anymore about demons who have kitten knees, because apparently that's one of his favorite things, except I just did it again, so.
Good going, Jim.
Oops. I have to chop that up.
So we get a lot of questions about how people, you know, get started writing in the industry and things like that. And Crawl, you know, it certainly is a good spot for people to submit work. How would someone that once they know a show, a topic you've got for an upcoming scene, how would they go about submitting something for consideration to Crawl?
Oh, they would just send me an email, either directly or crawl@straycouches.com with a short blurb on the submission. That's the first thing I ask for.
So pitch first.
Definitely a pitch. Pitch it first. Because if you send me attachments or links and stuff, it's just going to get buried. There's a lot of emails that I get that's not Crawl related, and I don't have the best memory, so I forget about things. So a pitch. If you send me a pitch and I'm interested, I'll reply back as soon as I can. And it's usually with seeing a sample or seeing or with a direction. If I think it's a good idea and I like where it's going, I'll ask for more details and stuff like that.
Very cool.
Great.
Well, we focused a lot on Crawl, but I want to touch on one more thing before we get to the end of the episode, and that's how your name pops up in more editorial credits than any guy I've seen. You're doing a lot of behind the scenes. I mean, which is not always apparent because, you know, you're just a DCC fan and you pick up a module and, oh, look, this is Harley's adventure from 4th edition Dungeon Crawl Classics or 3.5, except now it's for DCC.
Right,
and you're the guy helping put those together, right?
I have editor credits because about a year or so ago, I basically started editing all the official DCC RPG modules, and so I get the documents and run it through my. It goes through my eyeballs.
And how did you land that gig?
Joseph asked me. he sent me an email. And he asked me if I would be interested in doing it, and I couldn't. I would. There's no way I would pass that up.
Well, that is the most direct method, I suppose.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I'm thinking ahead here to my personal life, and I may need to butter you up a little in advance.
Yeah, I mean, I was part of the beta process, and I did. I contributed a lot of. Suggestions and comments, and when it was going through the draft process, I thumbed through it, and whenever I found some little glitches here and there, I mentioned it or inconsistencies, and I think he obviously he reads my zine, so maybe he noticed that I might have an eye for certain details. Maybe that's why, and so he asked me.
Well, you know, we let our listeners sit through this whole episode in anticipation to find out Dak's secret link to the show.
Oh, you're exactly right. May I tell the story, Job, or would you?
Yeah, sure. No, okay. You go for it.
The secret origin of Spellburn podcast, I don't think we've ever talked about on air, is this whole thing was Job's idea. Job came up with this thing from soup to nuts before any of the rest of us were involved. I found out about it when Job approached me to possibly come in as the third host, having already secured himself and the Reverend Dak J. Ultimac.
Yep.
Nice.
So this was like the 1954 version of the Beatles.
Jim was my second choice.
Oh. I really like the relationship we have now, Job, because I stumbled across that first email a couple of weeks ago. And I'm glad we have the relationship we have now.
Oh, really? Okay, I'll have to pull that one up. Anyway,
you made an excellent choice there, Job.
Yeah, I mean, long story short, Jim.
Well, the only reason I'm the lead co-host or lead host is because I have the biggest mouth. That's how that happens. But
Dak
was almost there.
Yeah, if we ever play that first episode, that you can hear me try to intro the show for about 5 minutes, and then Jim's like, you know what? Just be quiet. I'll take the reins here. You don't know what the hell you're doing.
Something like that.
Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, unfortunately, just it didn't. Once we had you know, three people, the scheduling just didn't work out with Dak. So
and you guys the J all... in his name is in the wrong place.
Yeah, the J is in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Had we only known.
So then we found Jeffrey. I don't know how that we found him.
That was a third wheel.
You kept posting. Kept posting on G Plus over and over, and you weren't annoying.
Nice low bar there.
But no good idea ever truly dies. So here we are a year and a half later, and we got Dak.
Yay. Yay. The scheduling finally worked out.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you were able to make it, Dak.
Yeah,
and
me too.
Next time I'm in LA, TSA shootings be damned, I will find a way to get together with you.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It
goes for any of you guys. If any of you guys come through LA, you should always hit me up. I've met a couple people. Jürgen Meyer, I hung out with him for a day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's been doing a couple things for DCC.
Yeah, we can show up and help staple zines.
Dude, if you offered me that chance, I'd totally do it. That would be awesome.
Oh, you never know. I actually did put together an issue out of town. I was in Arizona for like a week, and I continued my process, and I actually brought my staplers, and I went to the local print shop and got my zines printed out there, and I sitting in a hotel room my whole afternoon instead of in the pool. I was sitting there stapling zines and folding and shipping them off. You should look at the post stamp. Post on, I can't remember which issue it was, but if you look at the postmarks, it would show Arizona or Phoenix.
Oh, too funny.
That's cool.
See,
do what you love. You never work another day the rest of your life, right?
Definitely.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode, but before we go, we're going to be a little more diligent about our Dungeon Denizens submissions, especially since we've got a really shiny one for this particular show, so let's go do that.
Go on, boss, chop his head off.
Right, silly little speeder.
Jesus Christ! I warned you!
My armor is like tenfold shields. My teeth are like swords. My claws, spears.
Run away! Run away! Run away!
Dungeon Denizens.
Jeffrey, you heeded the word. We have a Dungeon Denizen submission that was not only kick-ass, but came with its own art.
Came with its own art.
Yay.
Definitely. That is always a vote getter for people that are wondering.
Right. I mean, your choices are the drunk monkey who's on the podcast or whatever artist you can go find. So go find the artist.
So this week's Dungeon Denizen was submitted by Roy Snyder, and the art was by Nate Koffler, and they submitted The Stalker of the Doomed. And essentially, this is a creature that if an adventuring party disturbs a tomb's protection curse, it evolves into this curse that essentially possesses a nearby predator and turns it into the Stalker of the Doomed. It maintains its overall appearance as its host animal, but becomes more than twice its size. The spirit of the curse takes hold of the creature, and its shadow withdraws and coalesces over its form. It's in a constant state of rot. It never heals open wounds that appear about its body. It appears undead, but it's in a constant state of suspended life. And essentially, this creature is just transformed creatures, and it could be a wolf, a bear, an alligator, an owl, a hippopotamus, any nearby predator could be possessed by this. And that creature will then try to stalk the person that triggered the curse at the tomb. And along its way, it will happily kill and dominate other creatures in the area, and it sort of establishes a hunting ground. it, about mid-range. It's got a nit plus 5, plus 6 on bite. Has the Curse of the Interloper, which when it strikes its prey that it was initially set out to strike, pretty much does nearly the same to them, turns them into a lycanthrope. And if you're not the initial prey, then there's this cool little random chart, random table that you roll on to see what exactly happens to you if you're attacked and bit by this creature. I don't know. You guys got anything else you want to add to this creature?
This thing is just super sweet because it's not a typical one-pop encounter kill and it's dead. This is something that's going to be plaguing your characters for session after session.
Yeah, he included like the whole ecology of this thing. A lot of effort, man.
And yeah, I think you're right, Jim. That is one of the cool parts about it. It hunts you and stalks you, you know. So it's not just like, oh, I triggered this curse. What's going to happen? You know, it's coming for you. So
very nice. Oh, jeez. Nicely done, Roy.
Yeah, there are some really good parts in there.
Good job.
You guys will enjoy it when it's posted.
And the bribes didn't hurt either.
Not at all. Glad I got those out to you in time.
Yeah, I mean, as far as bribes go, that's a good time to mention that if you're doing third-party stuff for DCC and would like us to consider reviewing on the show, a PDF doesn't hurt that we can actually read and review. Or am I wrong?
No, you're totally right.
Works.
We are easily influenced.
I meant that in the purest, most proper journalistic sense. I wasn't trolling for free game stuff. Much, anyway. That will wrap it up for the show, and it's really been a good one. Dak, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having me.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Dak. Much appreciated.
You're welcome.
So remember, never split the party unless the party's already split.
Ba'alam.
What?
See you, everyone.
Good. Goodbye.
Night, guys.
And we're out.
Cool.
The Spellburn Podcast is a production of Wild Games Productions in association with D20Radio.com. The Spellburn theme music is provided by the band Glitter Wizard. You can find them at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com. Fanzine is available at crawlfanzine.blogspot.com or wherever fine fanzines are served. The Reverend Doc J. Ultimac, he's a little harder to track down. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Spellburn.